Our first case for argument is 21-2127, Intel versus XMTT. Mr. Mayer, please proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Intel submits that the board incorrectly construed the claims in such a way that caused it to focus on the configuration of the individual processors within the system rather than on the operation of the system. What the system is actually doing when it determined whether or not the system is in a parallel processing mode or a serial processing mode. We submit that that interpretation of the claims is inconsistent with the 388 patent's preferred embodiment and accordingly cannot be correct. And even the patent owner has argued to the district court that the board's final written decision constructions should not be adopted in the underlying litigation, where the court has stayed the case to await this court's guidance on claim construction. So what I'd like to do is start with the prior art, Nakai.
Would you instead, for me, start with whether or not there should be some sort of estoppel? Can you explain to me whether or your argument regarding how it is that the position taken now is not inconsistent with the position taken before the board? One of the particular pages I would draw your attention to is page 685 of the appendix, where Intel, I think, if I understand what this document is, you know, Intel brief, argues that the serial and parallel processors, with regard to the functioning of a system as a whole, not just the capabilities or configuration of serial and parallel processors as individual components. So this is Intel's supplemental brief regarding claim construction before the board, and it seems to be acknowledging and adopting and supporting exactly the construction that is the opposite of what you're now arguing for. So tell me why that wouldn't create an estoppel.
Sure, happy to address that. So there are two things that Intel agreed to below. The first was that the serial and parallel processors as individual components must be configured to execute instructions primarily in parallel or primarily in serial. Intel agreed with that in the IPR reply at Appendix 467 after the institution decision adopted that construction. We maintained that position at Appendix 685, where we said that the primarily in parallel and primarily in serial limitations apply not just to the processors as individual components, but could also be applied to the system as a whole, the operation of the system as a whole. So that's the first point we agreed with, but the final written decision did away with that construction at Appendix 9. The second thing we agreed with, which is what I believe Your Honor was pointing
to. Yeah, it depends on how we interpret just to.
Not just. Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. So what we were interpreting
doesn't necessarily mean both.
I mean, I thought that the claim construction that they put in their final written decision only differed from the one you agreed to by adding what seems to me a superfluous on the serial processor at the end. If we agree, or if we find that that phrase is on the serial processor is just redundant and superfluous, then isn't that the exact claim construction you agreed to?
Well, the problem with that is that single sentence where they added on the serial processor and on the parallel processor wasn't the only construction that the board engaged in. They also engaged in a construction on the page before at Appendix 11 where they construed the processors themselves to be, quote, configured to have the serial and parallel processing modes. That was error because the modes are directed to the operation of the system. They're not directed to the configuration of the processors. So that was the first error. The more egregious error of claim construction, I believe, occurred at Appendix 27.
Wait, can you just, before you go to that, so are you not challenging this, what I just talked about, the claim construction about it's adapted to execute software instructions so that the system is executing largely but not wholly in serial? You're still okay with that claim construction?
So that part of it. The part where the board differed in the final written decision, as you observed, was on to add the on the serial processor on the parallel.
Well, that's what I ask you, though. If I find that simply redundant, which I think it is, then you've agreed to that claim construction.
If that is simply redundant, then that construction is fine. But it's the other constructions that I think led the board to the incorrect conclusion.
Can you point to me what you're talking about when you're talking about construction? Or are you really just talking about how they applied this construction to try to get away from the substantial evidence standard?
Right. No. So yes, two points to that. Appendix 11. I think here you can clearly see that there was construction occurring. At Appendix 11, this is in the claim construction section. And in the second paragraph there, the board determined that the claimed serial processor must be configured to have a serial processing mode, and it then further defined the mode. And it also said the parallel processors must be configured to have a parallel processing mode. Saying what a claim term must have, we submit, is claim construction there. And then at Appendix 27...
But it goes on, if you're looking at the second sentence where it says the claim serial processor must be configured to have a serial processing mode, it puts in parens a mode where the system executes largely but not wholly in serial, which is the claim construction you just agreed to.
But the problem is conflating what the processors require with what the system does in the modes. And I think that the best way to see why that is wrong is to see that it's inconsistent with the 388 patent's preferred embodiment. So I can explain why the board's construction, its interpretation at Appendix 27, is inconsistent with the 388 patent. But before I go there, I'll address the point.
Where on page 27 are you speaking?
So Appendix 27, in the first full paragraph, the board focused on what happens at the time T6 in the prior art called Nikaya.
This is not a claim construction, right? This is their application of the claim to Nikaya. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but this is the substantial evidence part, right?
So
they're explaining why, even if they adopt your claim construction, they still think you lose.
Well, so three points in response to that. One, they were still proceeding under their prior construction at Appendix 11 that kind of conflated the modes with the processors. But more importantly, even though this section was not
titled... Can you go back to 11? I don't understand what you're arguing about. That paragraph is the constructions that everybody seems to have agreed to, or you seem to have agreed to. Adapted to means configured to. You don't have any objection to that, right?
No objection to that.
Primarily means largely but not wholly. You agree with that?
Right.
In the serial and parallel processing modes, each refer to the execution of a system as a whole.
That's right.
You agree to that?
But what we did not agree to, and where we think the board went wrong, is that it said the processors must be configured to have the modes. The processors don't have to be configured.
But did we reach that? I was under the impression that the main problem was the distinction between looking at the functioning of the processors individually as opposed to seeing them functioning in the system. And my understanding was that the board, so even assuming you're right as to a minor an error in claim construction on these other issues, why aren't you on the hook for the having conceded that the issue turns on individual as opposed to system?
So if I understand.
You agreed below, I believe, that the proper analysis was to look at it in terms of a system.
So
if you still agree to that, even though you may suggesting that the claim construction includes something else, the rationale of the board decision was once you are agreed that it's the system you're looking at as opposed to the individual processors, your petition doesn't address the issue. So it's as if you're saying there's a disconnect between the petition and the invention in suit. And consequently, you lose. That's the way I understood the board to be ruling.
Well, I just don't think the board's decision can be reconciled with the preferred embodiment. What the board did...
Right, but if your adversary is saying that if we agree that the correct claim construction is system, viewing the processors as a system operation as opposed to individual, and that you don't make any argument that you could win if that's the claim construction.
Oh, if under that construction, we do make the argument that we could win. So let's, under the hypothetical where the board didn't do what we think was wrong at Appendix 11, and the board just went with what we had advanced.
Where do you make, I mean, your adversary is saying that you, in essence, are making no argument that if the system is correct, where does your petition deal with systems?
Oh, under
I read your petition, and I word searched it for system that doesn't exist.
Well, so in the petition, we never addressed the phrase primarily in serial and primarily in parallel as applied to the system.
That isn't the question. You never addressed the functioning of the invention as a system, as the processor functioning within a system as opposed to individually.
And it's that's correct. And the board noted that was a new construction that came up at the oral hearing. And at Appendix 9, the board said...
But just assume, not talk about when it came up or what, just assume that that you agreed below that the way that the invention should be looked at is as a system, not individually. And the board said your petition simply doesn't address that issue, you lose.
But what we said is if the board is going to look at it that way, in a way that the board conceded, quote, differed from either party at Appendix 9, then we should have had an opportunity to respond. And we did respond in the supplemental briefing. And the board chose not to consider that, but they should have.
Well,
so if
the board read your supplemental briefing as saying you agreed with them that the system is how you look at it, not the individual processors.
Right, but what we didn't agree with and what the board did was it tied the configuration. It looked at the number of processors configured as serial or parallel to decide whether you're in a serial or parallel processing mode. What it should have done is just looked at what the system is doing, because between time T7 and T8, there's one processor, 1001, executing one instruction, P301, in serial. There is no question that during that time period we identified as a serial processing mode, the system is operating in serial. It's only because the board counted up previously how many processors had been configured as
was parallel. That a claim construction issue or an interpretation of a prior art issue?
I think it's a claim construction issue, and I think this court has held...
It sounds like a substantial evidence question to me. You're talking about what the prior art discloses, specifically at certain points in time, and you disagree with the board's analysis of the prior art.
Well, we addressed substantial evidence at page 55 of the blue brief and at 20 to 21 of the gray brief. And we would submit to your honors that if that's the case, if it's substantial evidence, then there's no way you could find that between time T7 and T8, where only one serial processor is executing in serial, there's no way you could find that that's something other than serial processing mode.
I have a technical question. It may be stupid, but can you have a mode where the system executes largely but not wholly in serial without having the claimed serial processor configured to work in a serial processing mode?
I think the answer is no. You have to have at least one.
So then what's the problem with the construction?
The problem with
I understood this an argument to be between whether we were to focus on the mode of the system or the mode of the individual processors. And I understood you to argue it should be the system. But if the system can't operate in that mode unless the individual claimed processor is also in that mode, what is your problem with the board's construction on page 11?
The question we're asking your honors to resolve is how do you figure out when you're in a serial processing mode? And we submit that you look at what the system's doing. So if you have only one processor executing in serial, you're in a serial mode. You shouldn't be looking and counting up how many processors were configured as parallel if those processors are sitting idly and not doing anything. And that's where the board went wrong. The board observed that between T7 and T8, there were seven processors configured
in
parallel.
That's hands down a substantial evidence question. That is not a question of claim construction. That is a question of how you determine whether the construction is met, not how the claim should be construed.
Well, Your Honor, you know, in the Corning v. Fassfeld case, 873 F3rd, 896 at 900, this court looked to the motivation to combine analysis and found that the board there was actually performing an interpretation of its own construction. And we think that's what the board did here. They construed the terms at 11, but it's not apparent how that affected the analysis just by looking at Appendix 11 alone. You can see the effect of conflating the processor limitations with the mode limitations at Appendix 27, where the board just incorrectly counted up how many processors were configured in parallel, even though those processors are doing nothing.
You've used all of your time and all of your rebuttal time. Let's hear from the opposing counsel, Mr. Rowles.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Am I saying that right? Is it Rowles?
It's Rowles, Your Honor.
Rowles. Rowles. Thank you. Mr. Rowles.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I think it's not disputed at this point that at Appendix 11, Appendix 12, the board's construction, which begins in a paragraph starting in sum, that Intel is not disputing that description of the claims, that we are to look at the system as a whole and determine whether, in the board's view, the system as a whole is processing primarily in serial or primarily in parallel. The one difference noted by Your Honor was the addition of on the serial processor, on the parallel processor, which we argue in the brief it is a clarification or surplusage. And I think if we look at Appendix 9, the second paragraph on Appendix 9, where the board introduces the claim construction question, they point out that in the final sentence, our authorization, referring to the order that provided the preliminary construction, included an abbreviated version of the claim construction that follows. So the board itself is making clear it had no intent to radically change the claim construction from the preliminary construction, which Intel agreed to, and what it applied in the final written decision.
And even though the board may have tweaked the construction here, I mean, it seems like it was right within the realm of the disputed issue that both parties briefed. Is that fair?
I agree, Your Honor. And I think when we look at the board's application to the prior art, the extraneous issues potentially about the wording of some of the construction don't impact the board's analysis of the art.
But in this case, you have a board construction that is slightly different, but not radically different from what was proposed by the two parties on exactly the point that was in controversy and fully briefed by the two parties. And I'm not even sure the board needed to ask for supplemental briefing under those circumstances, but it did. Is there any evidence that the board refused to consider the supplemental briefing that was supplied?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor. I think the board, in a belt and suspenders fashion, addressed the supplemental briefing argument and explained at Appendix 29 why the explanation provided by Intel of Nakaya's operation, the alleged what happens at T7 or T8 or T9, the board said that was inconsistent with Nakaya, and the board said specifically that they believe that Nakaya contradicted the petitioner's description in two ways. And this is at Appendix 29, where they begin with, even if the petitioner could rely on their brief to correct the petition, it does not do so, would not correct the petition. And in the paragraph beginning first, what the board says is Nakaya's system is actually in parallel processing mode because it is executing largely but not wholly 7 of 8 processors in parallel. So the board has made a factual determination based on its review of Nakaya that the system is actually executing in parallel. It's not just configured to, it doesn't just have some number of processors, but it actually is configured to do that. And that finding was supported by substantial evidence.
I was trying to get you to address the due process argument. So why don't you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. This court has evaluated similar situations where a claim construction issue arose later in the trial after the institution decision. And I think one through line through those cases is the question of whether the board changed a previously determined construction that the parties had been relying on and then essentially changed theories midstream. There's no evidence of that here because the board, as it said, did not construe this term, did not construe primarily in the institution decision, wasn't asked to. This issue came up during trial. It was addressed at the oral hearing. And then the board, eliminating any due process concern, gave the parties the opportunity to specifically brief this issue, including providing a preliminary construction, which they end up adopting. And so Intel has had not only at the oral argument, which is what was the case in some of the court's other cases like TQ Delta. In TQ Delta, the only discussion was at the oral hearing. Here, the board went further and provided an opportunity to provide briefing on the specific issue of claim construction. And the Intel made the choice to agree with the board's construction, the preliminary construction. They didn't have to make that choice, but they did. And now they have to live with the consequences of that. The board agreed that the petition was silent as to the application of that construction to the prior art.
Well, that, I think one of the other things Intel argues in the due process challenge is that somehow the board ultimately adopted a changed claim construction, and it wasn't given an opportunity to explain how, under that new construction, the prior art continued to satisfy all the elements. Do you believe in an IPR that that is a necessary component for due process purposes, that a petitioner who did not succeed on their claim construction be given an opportunity to sort of amend the petition at that point and make arguments under the new construction as to why the patent claim would be invalid?
I don't believe that's required, Your Honor, and I think we know that because it's clear from this court's precedent that the board is not required to adopt a construction proposed by one of the parties. The board may adopt their own construction. And if that's the case, then there will always be situations where in the final written decision, the construction differs slightly or significantly from the particular proposals that a party made. The issue is...
Well, in fact, wouldn't it run headstrong into SAS if we were to adopt the position they want on due process, allow them to effectively amend their petition to now identify completely different pieces or different aspects of the prior art which satisfy... which weren't possibly laid out in their original petition?
I think it would allow petitioners to evade the one-year bar, certainly, or to evade the requirement to, that the board address all issues it presented in the petition. And
my question was, wouldn't it run headlong into SAS, the Supreme Court SAS decision, which says the petition governs the scope of the IPR? If they lose on their claim construction, would SAS permit the board to allow them then to effectively amend their petition to allege new or different aspects of prior art to satisfy under a new construction?
It would not be permitted, unless the board went through their process for allowing amendment, which did not happen here. But as a general rule, I would agree that would not be permitted. And so I think the question at the end of the day here is there does not seem to be a dispute about claim construction. If there was a changed claim construction to some degree, the board insulated itself by considering the supplemental brief and explaining why that was inconsistent with its determination of Nakaya as a factual matter. And that determination was based on an analysis of Nakaya. Preceding the analysis of patentability in the briefing, the board walks through Nakaya, including the figure at issues. This is at Appendix 24. The board explains its interpretation of Figure 8 of Nakaya, which is the central piece of evidence. The board also noted at Appendix 22 that when reading Nakaya, this is the third paragraph down, the board interpreted Nakaya as executing jobs rather than instructions. And in Figure 8, it's a job that begins at this critical point at T6 to T7. So these are all factual determinations made by the board in its review of the prior art, which Intel has not shown were completely unsupported by substantial evidence or by the evidence. The board is entitled to its own reading of Nakaya, and Intel's disagreement is not a basis to set aside or to vacate the board's decision. And so then the due process question, I would submit, is effectively resolved if the court determines that there was no substantial or any change between the preliminary construction and the one that the board applied in the final written decision. Well, then there is no due process concern at all because Intel was aware of the construction, advocated for it, and was granted it. And even if there was some change, Intel was on notice that there was this particular claim construction dispute that the board thought was critical to its analysis and was permitted the opportunity to brief it, which is what a petitioner or any party in an APA-governed proceeding is entitled to. And then finally, the board's analysis of that factual determination in the supplemental brief, considering the supplemental brief, despite finding it was not required to, it eliminates any need to set aside. the judgment. And unless there are further questions from the panel, I'll end there.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Meyer, I'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll just make one quick point.
Can I just ask you, when you were up here before, you said that even if we accept the board's conclusion, you argue that its decision on the CAIA isn't supported by substantial evidence in your brief. I didn't really see that. I see you asked for a remand so the board can reconsider it, but I don't see where you asked for us to find a lack of substantial evidence under the board's construction.
Not only did we ask this court to find a lack of substantial evidence, but what we asked this court to do under...
Where?
So under... So at the reply brief, the gray brief...
I'm not talking about the reply brief. I'm talking about this brief.
The blue brief.
You can't raise arguments for the first time in a reply brief.
So at page 55 of the blue brief... It says, accordingly, because the board provided no substantial evidence to support its finding that Nakaya fails to satisfy the claim modes and the transition between those modes, and because XMTT did not even dispute
that. But that's under the section that says Nakaya satisfies the modes under the correct claim constructions, which I interpret as being based upon your argument that the board's claim constructions were wrong and need to be corrected. What I'm asking is, accepting the board's claim constructions as they applied them, do you still have an argument that Nakaya discloses that and the board's decision to the contrary lacks substantial evidence?
So that would run into the due process. So if you take the board's final written decision...
Right, so the answer is there is not a section in the brief that said the board's decision regarding Nakaya lacks substantial evidence.
Correct. The final written decision construction... wasn't addressed by the petition or the supplemental briefing. What the supplemental briefing addressed was that intermediate construction before the final written decision. And because the construction changed, that's why we submit that there was a due process violation unless we're afforded an opportunity to respond.
I know you're out of time, but you started by saying there's one point you wanted to address. I want to let you get to your one point very quickly. Please, go ahead.
The only thing I would say is there was never a suggestion before the final written decision that the way you determine which mode the system was in is by counting up how many processors were configured as parallel as compared to how many were configured as serial. And that's the distinction that the board made at final written decision, appendix 27. Before that, it was just... look at what the system is doing. And if you just look at Nakaya, figure 8, at appendix 608, it's showing that the, or sorry, appendix 804, it's showing one processor between time T7 and T8 doing one instruction in serial. So I don't see how you can reconcile that with the 388 patent's preferred embodiment, which always has more processors configured as parallel than as in serial, but the system can still be said to execute in serial because, like Nakaya, the parallel processors are idle during that time.
Okay. I thank both counsel, and this case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.